Well, welcome to the second class in our series, Escape. Before I review what we looked at last time, I'd like to return to the letter of 1 Peter. 1 and 2 Peter both have a lot to say about culture and escape. And Peter warns us not to use freedom as a cover-up for evil. It's a recurring theme that some will, in the name of faith, in the name of religion, they will justify things that may never have occurred to them to justify otherwise. Peter says, live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Rather, live as servants of God. Well, we need to obviously repent of evil and not rationalize or whitewash it religiously. And yet it's not so easy, as we saw in the previous class, because of neural wiring. And we'll come back to this over and over in this series. A famous book, The Addicted Brain. In fact, I just noticed this last night. Emory University has a course on the addicted brain. And if you use that phrase, addicted brain, you'll find it pretty quickly. But the way our brains are wired and the ways they can be rewired if they've been faultily wired because of repetitive behaviors, it's very encouraging. And that, we believe, is part of escape. Last time we talked about alcohol, we talked about marijuana, we talked about painkillers. As I continue to study, I thought about the temperance movement. The temperance movement has a bit of a bad name right now. This was actually a lead article in a recent Christianity Today, which is an evangelical magazine. It said that the average American, this blew my mind, in the 1830s, the average American drank 7 gallons of pure alcohol a year. Not 7 gallons of beer, 7 gallons of pure alcohol. Through the temperance movement, that was brought down to just over 1 gallon of pure alcohol a year. Now, I'm not in favor, I know Steve's not in favor of a Christian Sharia. That is, like the Muslims, that Christians should enact legislation and monitor everyone and make sure. I mean, that's a double-edged sword. That's a very difficult thing. On the other hand, I think we can underestimate how effective it can be to have some guidelines in place and some restraints. We talked about marijuana, which is in the process of being legalized everywhere. We can't do anything to stop that. On the other hand, the government legalizes things that are not permissible for Christians. So you can't just say, if it's legal, I can do it. The government has legalized adultery. The government has legalized all kinds of behaviors. It's not criminal anymore to do quite a few things. And marijuana use will be legalized. Our response should never be about legality. It should be about what is Christ-like. Not the pursuit of happiness, but the pursuit of holiness. We also talked about painkillers. And I want to be sensitive. I know that a number of people are prescribed medication. Not to say that's right or wrong, but it can be very addictive. Much of Jesus' ministry was concerned with alleviating pain and suffering. So if you're looking for a justification for palliative measures, it's in the Bible right there. But we can, if we're not careful, lose ourselves in a world of pain medication. I shared personally last time how easy that would be, especially for some people like me, to get sucked into that. And yet there's nothing inherently wrong with medication. Character formation is what should be emphasized, not its deferment. And that's the problem which drug dependence can lead to. We defer the formation of character instead of biting the bullet, grasping the rose by the nettles, so to speak. That happens so easily when we become dependent. We want to form character, and character is only formed by perseverance through suffering, Romans 5. Well, we're going to be looking at a number of different things today. The need to escape from, or the negative of being controlled by, movies, novels, TV, series binging, and worlds of gaming. And right now, Steve will start us off with some thoughts on gaming.
Thank you so much. I'm getting ready to look at a scripture that I think is an overall great scripture for us to look at in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12. I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but I will not be mastered by anything. I'm going to give you an introduction about video game addiction. and then talk about why people get addicted to video games, talk about some of the side effects, the warning signs, and recommendations for parents. A few little introductory tidbits, trivia on video games. The average age of a gamer, what would you guess? 35. Shocking.
Wow.
Shocking. That means there are a lot of old dudes and ladies playing video games. 92.5% of kids play video games. 10 to 15% become addicted. In the most wired nation on earth, South Korea, they have more broadband internet technology for gaming. They have 24/7 gaming locations. Kids become addicted to gaming, and they have, instead of fat camps in Korea, they have video game addiction camps where kids detox and quit and abstain from video game addiction. The average kid today in America spends 10,000 hours playing video games by the time he graduates from high school. That is more than the classroom education combined in elementary, middle school, and high school. A lot of younger kids today are caught up in a virtual reality in the cyber world, and they have a hard time engaging, carrying on conversation in the real world. What they consider to be stupid small talk that adults are experts at, they consider to be trivial and just a waste of time. There's a threshold for gaming. And a lot of our teens and college students, particularly young men, reach this threshold very quickly. It's 21 hours a week. If somebody plays video games 21 hours a week, if you think about it, 7 days in a week, that would be 3 hours a day. That's not much. For a lot of people, they play a lot more than that. These are the symptoms that can come from that threshold. Depression, social phobia. Kids are afraid to engage socially because they've got their online internet cyber persona, and they've reached some social strata online, but they don't have social strata. And often the kids who have trouble navigating middle school, high school social strata are the ones that struggle and get addicted to gaming. So social phobia, depression, childhood obesity for the lack of activity. I mean, I remember playing outside for hours. I remember not coming home till the streetlights came on. You remember that? Being gone on my bicycle all day. That's before we became over-concerned with creepers and all that kind of thing. Pedophiles. But childhood obesity, poor school performance, and even after 21 hours of gaming, dementia. Children and young adults, young men and women, can get dementia. Now, I'm going to give you some extreme examples of gaming, I guess you could say gaming disasters. In the UK, there was a couple that were playing video games. They were, let's say, developmentally delayed or mentally challenged, but they had a child. And they played video games while 10 feet away, their child starved to death. There's another couple that played video games to the point that their dog died. And then the Department of Children and Family Services came in and found all three of their children malnourished and getting closer and closer to death themselves. There have been young men who have played video games 4 and 5 days straight, barely taking a break to use the bathroom, not wanting to use their hands to drink anything, and died of dehydration, dead of dehydration from gaming. Gaming can be addictive. The addictive part of gaming, how do people get addicted? Why do they get addicted? Number one, temporary escape. I watched a TED talk of a young man who is a video game addict, and he got started playing video games because of a very painful breakup. A girl broke up with him, and he just started escaping into video games, and he got lost in that world for several years. So usually people trying to escape from negative emotion like rejection or loneliness or boredom, those kind of emotions. Number two, those of us who don't game don't understand this, but gamers know that there's a social ladder within the gaming world. There are strata socially. You can develop an online name and an online image. You get weapons. You get ammunition. You get special powers. And you can start to live that image, that identity, where your cyber identity becomes more powerful, and really your real identity starts to shrink and shrink and shrink. The research on this, if you spend a little bit of time in the real world engaging in human relationships and a lot of time in the cyber world, the real world becomes insignificant. Number three, why do people get addicted to video games? Number three, challenge to beat peers. Because there are benefits to video gaming, eye-hand coordination, there can be intelligence advantages. Gaming can really teach a lot of things. It can be a great learning tool. Here's the problem. In that challenge to beat peers, that leads us to number four, success, achievement levels, weapons, powers, identity online. The power of addiction to gaming comes from intermittent reward. In the world of behavioral psychology, there is positive reward, where the dolphin jumps through the hula hoop and gets a sardine every time, or the dog does a trick and gets a dog biscuit. There's a negative reward, the experiment with the pigeon on the grate, the electric grate. Every time the pigeon ate, he got zapped, and pretty soon the pigeon quit eating and died. So positive and negative are very powerful. Intermittent is what the gaming world and the gambling world in the casinos around the world use intermittent reinforcement. Those little old ladies that are sitting at a slot machine with a bucket waiting on more quarters, dropping quarters in with that blurry look in their eyes, staring off into outer space, listening to those little noises, you know. It's intermittent reinforcement. It's once in a while that bucket gets full of coins. The same thing happens with gaming online. Intermittently and randomly, you are rewarded with special powers, with special weapons, with more ammunition. So you're given another life, a second life, a ninth life. So as you are rewarded, the hook is set. And that's where the addiction comes in. So a few more things I'd like to share. Warning signs for your children. Poor grades, decreased interest in hobbies, decreased interest in self-care, toothbrushing, bathing, hair washing, underwear, clothes changing, those kind of behaviors. The food and the drinks, everything starts accumulating in the bedroom. Increased social withdrawal and isolation, increased lying about gaming, and increased hiding gaming activity because they feel guilty or ashamed for how much they're playing. Parental actions to prevent video game addiction. Bring games out of the bedroom into the common areas. A 1 hour daily limit. And men, there's actually research that fathers can bond with their sons through gaming, because men tend to bond a little bit differently than women do. And so those activities, competitive activities, can be good things for men if not taken to an extreme. One thing I do want to say about all addiction that we said in our first class, and I'll repeat in this class, is there's a braking mechanism in our brain with serotonin. And some people don't have enough serotonin, and so their brain doesn't say enough, stop, that's it. And those are the people who tend more toward addiction. And what gaming and any kind of addiction does is it causes an increased secretion of dopamine, and your brain becomes tolerant of dopamine, and it requires more and more and more. So you've got the combination of increased secretion of dopamine, not enough serotonin, and that's why 10 to 15% of kids can become actually addicted to video games, even to the point of death, as I've shared in some of those extreme examples. But I'll turn it over to Douglas, and thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Steve. Again, gaming is especially a temptation for people like me who have a compulsive nature, or maybe you're obsessive, or maybe you're both. And I think many of us listening to this series understand instinctively that there are dangers here. And if you add competitive, I mean, I love to play. I don't really mind losing. I just love to play competitively. And when you've got levels to beat, records to set, those intermittent rewards coming along, whether it's a new life or a new weapon or hidden dog food in the game Wolfenstein I used to play when I was little. If you were really sick, you ate dog food. But whatever it is, We got to watch out. God created us for reality, and that means spending time in the real world. It's amazing how much time kids will spend in the video world. Now, you mentioned the threshold 3 hours a week. That means that's more than 1,000 hours a year. And I know we shouldn't just say all downtime is bad time, but just think of the good you could do in 1,000 hours a year. I mean, that's amazing what could be accomplished in those times. And there are social impacts here. Steve mentioned a number of them, but you know, we're not able to make small talk. We don't know how to communicate. I spent a lot of time talking to my grandparents growing up. You spent a lot of time talking to yours as well?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, every weekend got dropped off for hours.
Yeah, kids today wouldn't really know how to do that. Well, some would.
Yeah, some of them have a big struggle with small talk, talking about the weather, talking about the crops, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there is an upside to the gaming. I saw just a couple days ago that the Navy built a new ship. Now, I'm not sharing my military position here, but it was a destroyer, but it was designed with the young men in mind who've developed these incredible reflexes, hand-eye reflexes, because of the coordination that's bred by these games. But they're also dangerous, as Steve has highlighted. In our teaching committee, our members of the committee, one of the committees I'm in, are all over the world, from Asia to the Americas, and we were trying to meet through Second Life. And I found out later on, this is a way where you have an avatar, you choose your own appearance, your clothes. You can create your own landscape pretty much, but we can go meet and have meetings. But I realized I'm navigating through this virtual scenario, and there are other people. They're nothing to do with me. And so what, you could be hostile towards someone, or you could approach someone for a sexual encounter. And in our next meeting, we were saying, so how's it going with Second Life? And we got into a discussion because we realized that for many people, this is a pickup place. This is a place where you go to have sex online, and then we dropped it completely. Not that it couldn't be used in the right way, but we've got to really watch out. And I think parents, even in church, need to watch out. We want to teach children to be worshipful. Parenting in the Pew might be the book to recommend. But I see so many mothers and fathers who instead give a video game to their kids to keep them distracted, so they won't cause trouble, which is kind of an interesting association. I get to go to church and I get to play video games, and there's just nothing about God at all. Do you want to add anything before I talk about movies and novels and stuff? I'm sure you have a bit more. The media, the world, wants to press us into its mold. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, of the Apostle Paul, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as living sacrifices, which is your spiritual worship, or you could translate your reasonable service. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And if we're not careful, the media will press us into the mold of the world. And worldliness has so many components. Materialism. So often people are afraid that the big danger of the media is something sexual. And it certainly is, but almost every time there's a warning about sex in the Bible, there's also a warning about greed. And in affluent societies, we tend not to be very aware of materialism. And materialism it's not just the desire for things, but it's valuing things more than people. And this is the message constantly drilled in through Madison Avenue, but we get plenty of it through Hollywood and Wall Street as well. The world presses into its mold of materialism, but also of sex and violence. Violence, which seems not to draw such a high rating in North America, it does in Europe. Sex will draw an R rating for a movie in, say, the United States that it never would in France or Sweden. I remember living in Sweden, I saw one quite violent film, and this just shows you how conditioned I was as an American. It was the Robert De Niro version of Cape Fear, which I had seen, and it was quite a thriller in many ways. But I noticed when I saw it in Sweden, they'd taken out 20 minutes of it. I thought, why did they do that? Well, it was very violent. And I'm talking to my Swedish friends, well, that's not really that big a deal. It's just violence. Well, that is just like an American. Over there, they'd say, it's just sex. You know, it's natural. We leave that in there. But the violence, we take that out. In the United States, they take out the sex, although they're slipping in it more and more, if you didn't notice, but not the violence. But the world is the world. And the last component would be the self-focus, the self-reliance over God and God-reliance, what the Bible calls the flesh and the spirit. Well, there are many things that can get us besides gaming. I mentioned novels and movies and TV. I know something about the power. Like many of us, I grew up with television. I just got very busy in high school. And by the time I was 16, I didn't really have very much time for TV. It's not that I wouldn't have done it. I was involved in too many activities. Then I went off to college. I had no TV. Back then, you didn't have a TV. If there was one, it might be one in your dorm. But I didn't watch it. Probably also because I became a Christian soon after that, and we're just so busy with activities, and I wanted to reach out. 10 years later, at this time, my wife and I lived in Europe, and someone felt sorry for me because I didn't have a TV. Dropped off a little black and white, had about a 10-inch screen. It wasn't that exciting, but it somehow reconnected me with the world of TV, which I don't think was entirely good. It's true, I'd never seen any episodes of Dallas. There are all kinds of series that I knew zip about because I lived in Europe. We returned eventually to the United States. But I realized it's easy to get sucked in. And I started looking forward to my programs, my favorite programs, and something I as a kid, I think I knew better. I saw some of my older relatives who watched soap operas and watched things that I thought, that's stupid. But here I am becoming dependent and really looking forward to certain programs. I'm not saying TV is wrong or it's wrong to have a favorite program, but it can get us. It can take our mind and influence us in directions of materialism, sex, violence, self-reliance. Well, for me, you might think I don't see very many movies because you'll hardly ever catch me in the cinema, maybe once a year, twice a year. But to be honest with you, I watch more movies than most any of you in this room, because I have so many international flights a year. Well, for example, tomorrow I'm flying to Africa and I've got a 16-hour flight. Boy, that's time enough to watch 7 movies, except I'm hoping to sleep some, but that's not very likely. So I know what it's like. I mean, and I'll say, yeah, I saw some films, and someone says, what did you watch? I don't even remember. It's mindless. Sometimes mindless is good. We need downtime, but sometimes mindless is just mindless. And the Bible has a lot to say about the mind. Novels. Most of my reading is theology and history. If you look at my books in my house, a few years ago, I thought I need to be better balanced. I should read some novels. I've never read Agatha Christie. I kind of like spy novels and some of those classic Russian novels. And so I incorporated, instead of doing my normal reading, which was all theology, it's all Christian stuff. And then I would add in maybe a novel every 2 months, and now it's probably like one novel a month. It's still very small compared to the total amount I'm reading, but I've realized that this pulls on me. I get sucked in, and I start identifying with the protagonist who just murdered someone, or someone who takes revenge. And what, I'm not supposed to take revenge as a Christian. Or there's a scene that, that's pretty racy. There are moral dimensions here. You can't just say, I'm a mature Christian, I read what I want. At least I can't. Maybe I'm not mature enough. I've got to really think very carefully. But the one that really surprised me, as Steve and I were planning this, we thought we should, I think Steve suggested, you suggested the series binging. I'd never heard of this. My kids understood it. It was a strange concept because television can be recorded. And I did not know that, or at least I didn't know it experientially, although the technology has been out for a long time. I think I recorded one event in the 1990s, I mean one program. I don't think I've recorded anything in the last 20 years. But there's a thing called TiVo. It was funny, I was having a talk with a friend a couple years ago, and he mentioned TiVo, and I said, what's that? I really had no idea. We're just not into that. But now it doesn't matter, because now, through websites like Hulu.com, which one of my kids told me about, I discovered this, I guess it was 2 years ago, I can catch up on series. And something that I used to distance myself from, I feel is very powerful. It's like it's pulling me in, like the gravity of Jupiter. Very easy to watch a series. And because Well, okay, that's 42 minutes. Oh, but I should, you know, that's number five. I should probably watch episode six, especially because I'm doing something else. I'm just cleaning. It doesn't matter. Then I'm doing episode seven. Well, there are only 13 in the whole thing. Before you know it, you finished a whole season. And you see where this goes. A series can be much more powerful than a full-length motion picture. Think of even a Lord of the Rings kind of film. You know, these things that are 3-4 hours long. They have a lot of time to build up virtual worlds and develop character. But in series, a TV series, much more time, far more time. I mean, you're talking, especially with multiple seasons, you're talking about dozens of hours. And so it's much more detailed and can pull us in much more than any novel or movie ever could. And it's a virtual world. And like all these media worlds of gaming, movies, novels, television, series binging can really affect how we think. You'd say, but it's not the real world. Well, exactly. It's not the real world. And I do have a friend who's a professional psychologist who says you shouldn't spend too much time in the real world. And he's kind of right. He turned me on to SpongeBob SquarePants, which is a cartoon that's very clean and that's good. And I think he's onto something there. Too much time in the real world can be very heavy because the real world is full of pain and woe, and we need a break. On the other hand, it can alter our perception of reality in an unhealthy direction. Think of all the survivalist series. Series like Jericho, or the Survivors, or even the zombie genre, which is very much about survivalism. I was shocked to find out in my own church here in the Atlanta area, several members are survivalists. I mean, it's hard enough knowing some of the members have guns, which we find kind of creepy, but some are thinking society is going to collapse, and I've got guns, I've got ammo, I've got canned goods, I'm loaded up. So if society falls apart and people want your food, you're going to do what? You're going to blow them away? Aren't we supposed to feed our enemies? Isn't that what Romans 12 says? You know, after the verse 2 that I just read. So can you be a survivalist and be a Christian? Well, I guess we can change, but that hoarding mentality of not wanting to share doesn't really square, at least with my picture of Jesus. It's the soap opera series, which influences us to think that infidelity, marital infidelity, is okay, that gossip and pettiness are normal. Of course they're not. And then the perpetual terrorist themes increase fearfulness and make us feel fine about hating the other, the enemy, instead of loving him. Any and all of these areas have the potential to control me, to define my thoughts, and to define the attitudes of my heart. How about you? Have you ever woken up just thinking about the show you watched before you went to bed the night before? You ever woken up and, or you're taking the shower, or you're coming to with your coffee, and is that what we're supposed to be filling our minds with? Just think about that. Let me just say one other thing, and then I'll turn over to Steve for some closing comments. Many people, just as they can get pulled in by alcohol, pain meds, marijuana, they can get pulled in by worlds of gaming or in the world of novels or series binging. These addictions are very real. It can be frustrating, especially if you live with one of those people or it's someone that you can see he or she is really throwing his life away. We need to be patient. It may be frustrating, but we've got to show grace. People can change, but it may not be overnight. And that's easier said than done. We must show patience. Before I conclude this class, Steve, would you like to add a couple more minutes? That would be wonderful.
Yeah. I had a couple of things I wanted to share about violence in terms of video games. Some of these young men who have gone on a rampage in a school and shot a bunch of fellow students and teachers have used some of these video games as training videos for their exploits, and they've just gotten caught up in that and even used it to improve their technique. I wanted to share a scripture because this is something that Douglas alluded to, the concept of violence. And in Genesis 6, a lot of times we think about the reason for the flood. You know, God says, "My spirit will not contend with humans forever, they are mortal. Their days will be so-and-so, and I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I've created, you know, because every inclination of their heart was evil all the time." But we miss verse 11, 12, and 13. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and full of violence. And different societies, different countries can get an immunization almost, be oblivious to the amount of violence in their culture. There are civil wars all over the world. There are child soldiers in some places. But the violence in video games, what a lot of experts have found out is the violence doesn't always lead to violence, but when you try to pull a young adult, a young man, a young teenager away from video games, or if you discipline a child by taking away video games, that's when you get a violent reaction, a tantrum, a fit, because these kids are so addicted. But also to realize that what's being taught in these video games, that you shoot these things, these people, and splat, and there are blotches of blood, and a person is decapitated or loses some arms or legs, and you know that kind of thing, that's violence. And for us to become immune to violence is not a good thing. And so back to video game addiction in general, I would just say, and all the things that Douglas just mentioned, that if you can't moderate, then you need to abstain. And some people, because of their addictive nature, because they struggle more with addiction, they will need to abstain. And not everything is beneficial, you know.
And you said in the last class it's about 10% of people who are hardwired almost not to succeed?
10% of people lack the braking mechanism with their serotonin, and they continue to require more and more dopamine to get the same feeling. And so there's an increased tolerance to dopamine and the serotonin, the braking mechanism that says stop or I've had enough, isn't there in about 10% of humans for any addiction. And that goes for all these things that we just talked about.
Well, we really need to choose which world we want to live in. We want to live and function in the virtual world or the real world. But just as we may be pulled into virtual worlds and away from Christ, many others struggle with this. They've not escaped, and they need our understanding, and they need to show, they need to receive grace and feel patience from us. In the meantime, the fantasy world of virtual commitment, of pretend heroism, of character by proxy, that's not the real world. You're not as heroic as you would think just because you have your exploits on level 7 of Halo or whatever it is you play. In the real world, there are hurting people, there are lost people, there are people we need to spend time with. And our goal is that all of us will think about these things biblically and then share it with others. Be patient with those who are caught up in unhealthy cycles, of course, pointing them to God, telling them that there is hope, being patient. But for us, we've got to spend time in the real world. Next week, we're going to look at fantasy proxy relationships. That is, getting intimacy, getting fulfillment, or in a way, reframing God's plan for healthy sexuality through pornography, which is a scourge of our generation more than ever. And then we'll also, in class 4, be looking at computer and internet behaviors that we haven't looked at right now with gaming, and there are things like gambling and shopping and just general surfing. So we hope to see you at class 3 and class 4, if that is possible. Thank you for being here.
Amen. Thank you.